So I want to welcome you back to this morning session. And the first talk is by Rob Arnatan, and the title is Balloons and Hoops and the Universal Finitized Invariance, BF Theory and Ultimate Acceptance.
Okay. Thank you. So once again, my talk will follow a handout, and you can find copies in the back. And the whole version is on the screen right now. I should say that this talk is being taped, and I try to tape all my talks so that they're available later and also so that I can show them to my students later on. So to find it, you go to the URL that's on the handout, or you scan it with your phone, and there you'll find the handout itself. I suppose this is the handout for the previous talk. And there is also the video of the previous talk. The video of this talk is not yet on. So I'm not sure about my internet connection, so I went straight to, so I made a copy in advance. This is what you do if you click on, what you get if you click on the video. If you click on the pop-out handout, the handout will show and it will be synchronized with the video. And if you click on any time here, so, click at 27:47, which is the time of handout view 18, which is where we started talking about signs. So you can skip to the relevant moment whenever you want. This said, let me start with today's talk. Are you okay? Is this fine? Okay. So again, let me start by saying that I mean business. So, I mean, even if what I will say will appear abstract, it's for the purpose of computing things, actual numbers, Lie elements with coefficients, and these numbers are actually something. They're the invariant of the tangle written here, or more precisely, further to the left, not shown. And furthermore, for all I know, this is the best way to compute these numbers. So there is no unnecessary abstraction here. Okay? Now the scheme of my talk. So first of all, I will tell you about knotting balloons, meaning spheres, meaning S2s, and hoops, meaning loops, meaning S1s in R4. And I will tell you that this space of knottings of balloons and hoops in R4 actually has lovely algebraic structure. It looks like pi 1 and pi 2 of the space at the same time. With this lovely algebraic structure, it is most likely finitely presented. So that if you wanted to construct an invariant of it, it's enough to construct a well-behaved invariant, a homomorphic invariant, and define it on the generators. Okay? And also, I will tell you that this space completely contains ordinary knot theory. So, in three dimensions. So, so whatever we compute will be at least as strong or as ordinary knot invariants. Anyway, then I will present an ansatz for an invariant, and I will not prove the proof, I will not present the proof that it is invariant, but it really is invariant. Okay? And I will tell you that this invariant is probably is certainly a universal finite type invariant, and probably a complete evaluation in some sense of the BF quantum field theory in four dimensions. Then finally, I will tell you that if you reduce this invariant, you look at it in a certain quotient space, then what you get is an Alexander invariant, is a generalization of the Alexander polynomial, which, for all I know, is better than all other Alexander polynomials that are out there, and I will explain in what sense in a few minutes. Within the talk, there will be a topology question, which I hope Peter will solve by the end of the lecture. This is because I admire him, because I think he's, you know, he knows more than anybody else about four-dimensional topology. And I will mention BF theory, and here I'm a bit scared, but because it may turn out that Alberto already knows everything that I will have to say. So, and finally, I will say something about the ultimate Alexander invariant. So let me explain in what sense it is ultimate. Because probably I will not have time to say that at the end, because the organ will get up and tell me to stop. So, so you see, the ordinary Alexander invariant is pretty good, but like when you try to compute it, typically you end up constructing a certain matrix and then you have to take its determinant. And taking the determinant is an operation I don't understand, right? It means doing lots of row and columns operations and keeping track of the scalars that you used along the way and then multiplying them. And it has no meaning. It has no topological meaning. So the matrix is constructed in a sensical way, in a way that makes sense, but then what you do to it does not make sense. And therefore, if you try to categorify the Alexander polynomial, the only way you can think of a priori is to categorify determinants and categorify all row and column operations, and this simply doesn't make sense. Okay? So the advantage of what I will tell you about is that every intermediate step makes sense. Every intermediate step along the computation of the Alexander invariant will be the invariant of something. That something will not be a knot or a tangle, but rather a four-dimensional thing. But still, every step along the computation will make sense. Furthermore, actually there are other such evaluations of the Alexander polynomial. So you can, there are various extensions of the Alexander polynomial to tangles, and then every step along the computation will be just adding a crossing to the tangle, and then every step makes sense. Except all other extensions of the Alexander polynomial to tangles require an exponential amount of information at each step, even though the Alexander polynomial itself just contains a polynomial time computable. So all these other extensions are awful from that sense, and mine isn't. So if there is a hope to, you know, if you really dream that every knot invariant can be categorified, then that is the version of the Alexander polynomial that would be really dream to categorify. Okay. This said, let me start with the real content. Real content. So, balloons and hoops. So, balloons are up. Oops, sorry. Balloons are up at the top. They are oriented, but I will never use their orientation. And they are connected by a string to some point in R4. Usually I would make it be infinity and then draw everything in R4. Sorry, in S4. And usually I will make this point be infinity and draw everything in R4. Okay? And you may have a number of them, and I should say that I sometimes call balloons tails because in some other contexts they become tails of diagrams. Okay? And hoops are one-dimensional things drawn in blue, again numbered and oriented and connected by strings to infinity or based at infinity. I'm considering, so KBH of MM and N will be the space of all ribbon embeddings into R4 of, or S4 of such M balloons and N hoops. And I suppose I have to tell you what ribbon embeddings mean. And ribbon means that only, well, a ribbon embedding is an embedding of the sphere to R4, which extends to, which you can extend to a ball whose boundary of that sphere is that sphere, with certain singularities allowed on that ball. Okay? I don't think I want to tell you what these singularities are, but it's sort of standard fare. And if you wish, the picture I will show later has such a singularity right here, and that is exactly the singularity that is allowed and no more. Okay? So, but definitely at first pass, you can ignore this and just think of arbitrary balloons and hoops embedded in R4 or S4 with this point possibly going to infinity or possibly going somewhere else. So is it clear what space we're studying? Okay. There are two little pictures here. And one is here because it's pretty. And the other one down here, because it actually meant to say something. So, you know, this is Peter Pan. If you magnify it enough, you'll see that this is Peter Pan fighting with its own, with his own shadow. And essentially, definitely the shadow has a life different than Peter Pan himself. And the point is that when you think about ordinary tangles in R3, then they play a dual role. They both create the fundamental group of the complement, and they are elements of the fundamental group of the complement, because if you look at the little shadow that runs parallel to the knot, and it's an element of the fundamental group of the complement, and much of three-dimensional topology comes from this dual role. And the whole advantage of going to four dimensions and having balls and hoops is because now the two roles are split. The shadow and the thing itself don't have to go together anymore. So the balloons create fundamental group of the complement, and the hoops measure it. And they no longer have to go together, and that somehow is what will go on later on. Examples. Sorry, that was very philosophical. Now let's go concrete. So the first example is epsilon x. So it has a single hoop labeled by x going from infinity to infinity and not doing anything interesting, meaning it's the unwanted hoop. Okay? The next example is likewise with a single balloon. Okay, so let me tell you how to read these three-dimensional pictures, actually two-dimensional, but sort of lift them to three-dimensional, to the three dimensions in the usual way, but let me tell you how to read them in four dimensions. So first of all, inside R4, pick a copy of R3, and all of my pictures are drawn in that copy. Okay? And then the blue part of the picture, so the hoops or the heads, stay in R3 forever, never move. Okay? The red parts of the picture, so the red parts, the dark red parts, stay in R3 forever. Okay? But the pink parts indicate membranes that are sort of connected to the red parts and are a bit like a tennis racket. Okay, so this is a bit like a tennis racket except double. So there are two pink membranes here, and one you push a little bit up in R4, so in the T direction, and the other you push a little bit down in R4. In the T direction. So this little racket, tennis racket, actually stands for a ball. Sorry, a sphere, a balloon. Are you okay?
So these are all doubled, these spheres?
No, they're not double. Well, the sphere has an upper hemisphere and a lower hemisphere.
Okay, one is the reflection of the other.
One is the reflection of the
is
other.
Is that
yes.
always the case in your...
That will always be the case, yes. Okay, but this is again still an uninteresting example. It's the unknotted sphere. Okay, the next example begins to be interesting. So in R3, this appears to be singular because the blue arrow cuts through the racket, the tennis racket. But once you push one membrane up and one membrane down, this is non-singular. And in fact, this is sort of a generalization of the Hopfling one dimension up. So one of the two sides of the Hopfling became a sphere. So in some measurable sense, this has linking number one, and likewise there is this one which has linking number minus one, and for the numbers to make sense, I have to talk about orientations, but I don't want to. Okay, but is it clear? Okay.
So I have one question. Why do the two arcs intersect in the picture?
I will say that in a minute. In fact, I will say that now. Sorry, I went forward too quickly. So, here is a more sophisticated example. Okay? So it is interpreted in exactly the same way. Okay? So first of all, it has two hoops, so two one-dimensional things. This one going from infinity and back to infinity, and this one again going from infinity and back to infinity, and it has two balloons. A small one at the bottom and a complicated one going around. Okay? Now, as Peter noticed, I didn't even bother to tell you what the sense of the crossing here is, because it doesn't matter. Because one-dimensional things in R4 are never noted, do not need to be noted, are not noted. Okay? So, pick whichever sense you want. I mean, make it either an over or an under crossing in R3. I don't care, because in R4 it's the same. Okay? Likewise, I didn't bother to tell you, or actually I did bother to tell you, that these blue things goes under the membrane over here. The membrane is over here, under in the R3 sense. But it could have gone over just as well. It doesn't matter. Because this is a thin membrane, so topologically it's just like a line, and again, two lines in R4 cannot be noted. So it's topologically equivalent. However, over here you have a part of a hoop going through a part of a balloon, and this is noted, and likewise this is noted. Okay? The interaction of this membrane with itself is non-trivial, okay? And likewise, the interaction here between these two membranes is non-trivial. By the way, this interaction between this thick membrane and this thin membrane is trivial, because you could pull this whole sort of cap here through and out. Okay, so this knot is not in the most simple possible presentation, okay? What else do I have to say about this picture? Where did it come from? So it actually came, so right now I'm defining the map delta between ordinary tangle theory and KBH, from ordinary tangle theory to KBH, to knotted balloons and hoops. So if you have an ordinary tangle like here, okay, so it has one component that goes like that and it's called A, and another component that goes like that and it's called B. Then there is a canonical way, well, there is a map delta into KBH, and the image of it under this map will be that. What do you do? Well, first of all, every component of the original tangle is purple, which is blue plus red, so it becomes in four dimensions, it becomes two things. One is a blue thing which goes along it, and the other is a red thing which goes along it. The blue thing goes from minus infinity to infinity. The red thing is connected by a string to infinity, but only on one end, not on the other end. Okay? And the crossings, the three-dimensional crossings, become four-dimensional multi-crossings using the prescription, the recipe written over here. So a crossing becomes a local picture like this, where again I didn't bother to specify how the blues interact because I don't care, and the most interesting thing is how blue and how red and blue interact and how red and red interact. And I think it should be clear from the picture. Are you still with me? I hope. I don't know. By the way, I should say, if you've heard of virtual processing, of virtual knot theory, so in virtual knot theory, you're allowed to add sort of a DAO processing, virtual processing, so things that look like processing but aren't really. So everything that I've defined extends to virtual knot theory by defining the virtual processing to go to that. So a non-crossing goes to something that four-dimensionally looks like this, and again, there is no difference between over and under because the two ribbons that will be thickened to tubes in R3 are not knotted. So in R3 differ only by over minus up, by the difference between over and under. Therefore, in R4 there is not even a distinction between them. Okay. I should say that this map delta, one may verify and it works, the map delta satisfies all Riemeister moves. So if you have a Riemeister move on the left, it becomes equivalent of things in R4 on the right. And in fact, it satisfies yet another relation, the so-called overcrossings commute. So if you have two overcrossings on top of a virtual crossing, you can slide them to the other side, and the topology of the picture, or at least the interesting part of the topology of the picture, so the red part, is shown here. However, the other relation, undercrossings commute, so if this sort of line here was under, then you could not slide it, and again, the four-dimensional picture that explains it is here. Okay, so now comes my topology question. Oh, sorry, even before that, so a few facts. So first of all, delta, this map delta, does not lose a lot of information. In fact, if you restrict your attention to knots, so to tangles with just one end, with just two ends, so one tangles, so long knots, then delta is an injection. I believe delta is an injection always, even on more complicated three-dimensional tangles, but I never verified it in details. Some people here can tell me the answer rather easily. Anyway, delta maps V tangles, so tangles that are allowed to have virtual crossings, and in particular also ordinary tangles, but even more, into KBH, and the map is essentially onto. So, well, it cannot be onto because it will always map it will always map a tangle to something that has an equal number of balloons as hoops. But if you also allow to cut one hoop, so drop it, or puncture one balloon, so pop it and it goes away, so if you're allowed to drop components, then the map becomes onto. Okay? So you would want to know what the kernel is. And I already told you that the kernel contains Riemeister moves and also this extra move here. And the conjecture is that this is all. And this is a conjecture in four-dimensional topology. It's a conjecture that says, that ribbon four knots have a combinatorial, ribbon two knots in R4 have a combinatorial description in terms of things that look like Riemeister moves. So really my question to Peter, or to anybody else, sorry Peter, don't be mad at me for using you, please.
The usual topologist.
But anyway, My question to topologists in general is find any combinatorial presentation of ribbon four knots. Once you found any, I'm sure I can translate it to this one by combinatorics alone. Okay? Or maybe I will find that it's different than this one by combinatorics alone. But what is really needed is any combinatorial presentation like diagrams, module Riemeister moves, four ribbon knots in R4. Okay. Is it okay, Peter? Can I move on? You can fall asleep at this point, but Alberto can't yet. Okay, so I should say that this space KBH has operations, various, lots of fun operations on it. So let's start. Punctures and cuts I already mentioned, so it's essentially the little component. Also, there is connected sums. So if you have two KBHs, this is a binary operation. You have two KBHs, here is one, here is the other, you can form the connected sum by basically merging their points at infinity. Okay, their infinities. I don't want to say anything more about it, I think the picture makes it clear. It's well defined, topologically. Then comes the read fun operations. So the metagroup action, or the MGA structure on KBH. So, suppose K is a KBH, for the sake of the example, it has two balls, U and V, and two hoops, X and Y, and these may be knotted. I'm not yet telling you, the picture is just symbolic. They may be knotted in R4, okay? Then there is the operation which I will call tail multiply of U and V, into W. And this operation takes U and V and basically merges them, creates tunnels along the strings and merges them. And now it's a single balloon. Okay? So, by the way, for my notation, I like to write actions on the right and also compositions from left to right. So, my composition symbol and my action symbol is double slash. So, this is K acted on by the operation tail multiply of U and V into W. Okay? So, by the way, this operation looks very much like the product of pi 2, right? Of the second homotopy group. Okay? But it's not. The product of pi 2 is a binary operation which takes two things and outputs one. This is a unary operation which takes a KBH that has two balloons in it and produces a KBH with just one balloon in it. That's an important distinction because as a unary operation, U and V could be knotted with each other and that would still make sense. As a binary operation, you cannot speak about two fundamental group elements being linked with each other, okay? Likewise, there is a unary operation, again a unary operation which is parallel to the product in pi 1, so I'll call it head multiply of x and y into z, so you take x and y, you trace along x, then you trace along y, you get a single loop, which I will call z. Okay, and again, it's like pi 1, but it's become unary rather than binary. Okay? And finally, just like in ordinary homotopy theory, pi 1 acts on pi 2. So the parallel of that in my picture is that there is a unary operation called head on tail action, HTA, of head x acting on tail u, and what it does is you take the string of the balloon u and you let it and you wrap it around the path x. This is, by the way, the exact analog of how pi 1 acts on pi 2 in ordinary homotopy theory. Again, except it became a knot theory operation and a unary operation. Okay? Now, the reason there is a red heart balloon here is, one, because I want you all to love this song. But the other reason is because this red balloon indicates two of the operations here. So first of all, the multiplication in pi 2, so the tail multiply. Well, you know, if you have two balloons and a new red balloon, you can put one lobe of the heart balloon on one of the previous ones and the other lobe on the other, and that's multiplication in pi 2. And multiplication in pi 2, in pi 1, is really taking the string of the balloon and knotting it. Or the string of the balloon is alternatively the neck of the balloon, the part you blow air through And noting it is exactly what you do when you, you know, when you, you give the balloon to your kid and you don't want to, the air to run out. So these are all natural operations. They also have natural properties. So there are associativities. So for the purpose of this line, M stands for either tail multiply or head multiply, and both are associative. So again, they're associative in the meta sense, not in the ordinary sense, because they're not binary operations, they're unary operations. What I mean is that if you have a KBH with three components called A, B, and C, and they could be either all balloons or all loops, then merging A and B and calling the result A, and then merging the resulting A with C, again, I'm composing from left to right. So merging the resulting A with C and calling the result A, once again, is the same as B and C calling the result B, and then A and B calling the result A, and that's just ordinary associativity turned unary. Okay? But then there is more. So, you see, whenever you have a group acting on another group, there are two axioms involved, two primary axioms. Then there are minor axioms about identity and inverses and God knows what. But the two primary axioms are that when you act on a product, it's like acting on the first and then acting on the second. And when you act by a product, it's like doing the first action and then doing the second action. These axioms become when tail multiply, so first multiplying and then acting is the same as acting on the first and then acting on the second and then multiplying. And likewise, multiplying two hoops and then acting by the result is the same as acting by the first, then acting by the second, and then merging them. Okay? Now, so these are the axioms. The last one is not an axiom, it's a theorem. Okay? So, this theorem is the parallel of the construction of semi-direct products. So, whenever you have one group acting on another, you can construct their semi-direct product. In this case, what it means, and how does it work? How does a product, semi-direct product works? You let one act on the second, and then you multiply on the left and multiply on the right, something like that. Okay? So the parallel here is that you define the double multiply of A and B into C. This will be an operation between KBHs that have both a balloon called A and a loop called A, and both a balloon called B and a hoop called B, and it will create a KBH that no longer has these two balloons and hoops, but instead has one balloon called C and one hoop called C. And it will be when you first let B act on A, then you do tail multiply of the tails of the balloons A and B into C, then you do head multiply of the heads of the hoops A and B into C. So, sorry, this is the definition. Okay? This double multiply is defined to be this. And the claim is that it's associative, just like semi-direct products are associative. So it's associative in the meta sense. So let me again remind you what does associativity mean in the meta sense, and let me do it by showing another example of a meta-associative structure. Okay? So take ordinary tangles. So my color for ordinary tangles is purple. So take ordinary tangles, and in ordinary tangles, there is an operation. So here is a symbolic notation for an ordinary tangle with three components, A, B, and C. Okay? They could be tangled. I'm just not showing this. the operation multiply A and B is you connect the head of A to the tail of B, sorry, to the tail of B, by putting an empty strands. It actually doesn't quite make sense in ordinary tangle theory, but in virtual tangle theory it does. So in virtual tangle theory, you just connect. So in ordinary tangle theory, it makes sense only if this head is adjacent to this tail. In virtual tangle theory, they don't have to be adjacent. If they're not adjacent, you just connect them by whichever mean you want, but by virtual crossings. Okay? But anyway, you have this operation. Likewise, you have the operation multiply B and C. And these operations are form a commutative square. So MAB followed by MAC into A is, well, the same associativity as before, and the pictorial representation is here, and I don't want to say anything more. Claim, in some funny sense, you know, in as much as fun goes, this is perhaps the funniest part of my talk. So, in some fun sense, this metagroup of tangle concatenations, this ordinary compositions of tangles, or essentially ordinary concatenations in tangles, is somehow pi 1 semi-direct product pi 2. So, in other words, if you have a single ordinary tangle with components A and B. So I've put the components far away from each other, but I don't really mean it. They could be tangled with each other. Okay? And you apply the map delta, you will get a single KBH with two balloons, one called A and one called B, and two hoops, one called A and one called B. Okay? And if you concatenate in the tangle world, you'll get a single component called C. You apply delta, you'll get this, and the claim is that you get a commutative square. And it's a lovely exercise, and I'll say nothing about it. Okay? But the moral from this exercise is that if you want to understand at least the image of ordinary tangles into KBH, it's enough to understand the operations that I've indicated, so the pi 1, pi 2 operations, and the one single crossing tangle, because it generates everything. But the image of this one is exactly, or can be made out, of the four generators that I wrote before, the racket, the tennis racket, and the various variants of it. Okay? So if I want, so if I will find a target space that has the same operations, tail multiply, head multiply, and HTA, and which is acted on, sorry, and which satisfy the same axioms, then in order to construct an invariant of KBHs, and therefore also of ordinary tangles, and therefore also of ordinary knots, all I need to do is to construct, all I need to do is to assign values to the generators, so that the axioms will be satisfied. Okay. Let me give you an example. By the way, are you okay? Is this fine? So let me give you example number zero. So invariants, yes?
Would it happen that you get some relations in four dimensions if you do that?
So, in as much as Ribbon knots, this is the question that I've asked, as Ribbon knots are concerned, this is the question that I've asked Peter. But if you restrict it, so you see, really, there is a picture, there is a map from usual knots into KBH diagrams. So KBH diagrams, which I never quite specified what they are, but they're related to virtual knot diagrams, modulo virtual relations. Okay? into KBH, into KBHs. The question I asked Peter is about this kernel. There may be more to this kernel than I know, and therefore, if I construct invariants of these things, they may not descend to here, but the conjecture is that they do. Okay? However, the combined kernel, I fully understand, and it's just, I fully understand. It's just essentially ordinary randomized moments. So whatever invariant that I will construct might not quite be an invariant of KBHs, but I conjecture it is. But certainly it is an invariant of, so if you restrict your attention to ordinary knots and tangles, it certainly is an invariant. Okay? Anyway, but again, my conjecture is that there are no surprises. Okay. So here is invariant number zero. Essentially, it's the pi 1, the fundamental group of the complement. So let capital pi 1 denote the honest pi 1 of the complement of a KBH in R4. So it doesn't even see the loops, it only sees the balloons. Okay? Let me map an ordinary KBH to a triple. First of all, this pi 1, and then a sequence of elements of pi 1, and then another sequence of elements of pi 1. The first sequence, the UIs, are just the meridians of the balls, of the balloons, computed near the base point. So, in other words, U1 is you start from the base point, you go along the stream to the balloon, do a hopfish thing, and come back. Okay? And the X's are simply the hoops regarded as elements of the fundamental group. So, I have to tell you how this invariant behaves under my operations, tail multiply, head multiply, and HTA, head on tail action. So you can check that, tail multiply acts by, merging two balloons, which amounts to modding out or merging two of the UIs and at the same time collapsing pi 1 by adding the relation. U1 is equal to U2 if the two ones being merged are U1 and U2. Okay? Head multiply, so the multiplication of hoops, acts by simply multiplying two elements in this sequence. Okay? And the fine thing is how HTA acts. So head on tail action acts by, essentially, instead of the longitude, instead of the meridian being this simple-minded thing that it was here, it will become, it will become go along the loop, do the old meridian, and come back. So really, it acts by adding a new generator to the fundamental group, call it U bar. So taking the free product of the old fundamental group with a single generator group generated by U bar, and adding the relation that the old U is equal to a conjugate of U bar. Okay. So this is a lovely invariant. The only problem with it is that it's not really computable, because at the end, you end up modifying the fundamental group, and once you modify the fundamental group, detecting groups is difficult. Understanding groups is difficult. So it's not really computable, but it's a good model for the next attempt, which will be a failure. So Okay, my next idea is the following. At least when we start, suppose the balloons are not mounted, and suppose the hoops are, then X1 is an element in the fundamental group of the complements of the balloons, and the fundamental group of the complements of the balloons is the free group generated by U1 up to, well, by the U's. So X1 is an element of the free group generated by the U's. And likewise X2. So maybe I can continue writing the X's as elements in the free group generated by the U's, even as I make these operations. So tail multiply gives no problem, because when I multiply when I merge two U's, it just means that in the free words that represent the X's, I will combine two generators. Head multiply just becomes products in the free group. But the problem is with the head on tail action. So I don't think I want to go through this line, but the point is that the head on tail action will act by replacing the word for U1, or replacing every occurrence of U1 anywhere by, or any occurrence of U, let me just call it U. So replacing any occurrence of U anywhere by U conjugated by X. But X in itself might have U's in it. So I will replace a U here by U conjugated by X, but this X has U's in it, so I have to replace them again by U conjugated by X, and the process never terminates. Okay? So it doesn't, so therefore it's a failure. But it's a failure that comes near success, because the changes as you iterate more and more are higher and higher conjugators. So are deeper and deeper in the lower central series. So if you mod out by sufficient, or if you complete, if you look at the, what is it called, nilpotent completion, unipotent completion, and if you mod out by, basically you can complete in a certain completion, it will make sense, and let me tell you what the answers comes out to be. Okay? So, and there, sorry, but then there is a twist. Okay, so let T be the set of U's, and let H be the set of heads, and let FL stands for the free algebra on the symbols in T. So instead of the freely group, I will work with the freely algebra, and it's a graded object. So complete it. So I allow infinite sums provided the degrees run to infinity. And later I will also use the free associative algebra and essentially the free associative algebra modulo moving one letter from the right to the left. So cyclic words on the same alphabet of T. And then let me construct a space M of T and H. So M of T and H should be, in your mind, an analog of KVH of T and H. Rather, it's not quite an analog, it's the target space of an invariant from knotted balloons and hoops. So M of T and H should have on it the same tail multiply and head multiply operation and HTA, head on tail action, as KBH. Okay? So what is MTH? So it's a pair of things. One thing separated by a semicolon, which right now has my mouse on it. So the thing on the right of the semicolon, I will discuss later, is an element omega, and omega is a cyclic word, or more precisely, possibly an infinite linear combination of cyclic words. The thing on the left of the semicolon is an associative array, lambda bar, so essentially a list for every head an element lambda x in the free algebra. Okay? And this sort of replaces what I had before. For every hoop, an element of the free group. Instead, for every hoop, I have an element of the 3D algebra completed. Okay? So here is a pictorial representation. So a typical element of MTH will look like x column, the element, the bracket of u and v. So it's a tree. And then y column, the element v minus 22 over 7, the bracket of u with the bracket of u and v. And then semicolon omega, and omega is a cyclic word, so I write it like a graph like this. Okay? But of course, it could be a linear combination of cyclic words. This is just symbolic. Now I have to tell you what the operations are. So the operation which corresponds to the connected sum of two KBHs is, well, you take the union of the two arrays of Lie elements and you add the two cyclic words. The operation corresponding to tail multiply is, so tail multiply takes a label u and a label v and should produce a label w. So you take whatever you had before, so the whole thing, both the Lie elements and the cyclic word, and wherever you see a u or a v, you replace it by a w.
So,
it would be
easier to follow if I knew where the balloons are in these two pictures.
The balloons are u's and v's. The balloons, so it's like here. The balloon, or rather like the failed example. The failed example was the x's were, the failed example was to try to write the x's in terms of the u's, as three words in the u's. So the u's become the generators of a free group, in this case, and a free algebra, Lie algebra later, and the x's becomes words in that group, or elements in that free algebra. Okay, so the balloons are the generators of the free algebra. So they appear as the leaves of the trees that represent elements in the free algebra. Okay.
What's the x? What kind of object is this x?
X is just the name of one of the hoops. So I have hoops and their name x, y, z, whatever. And for each hoop, I have an element of the 3D algebra. So for each element, for each sort of pi 1, meta pi 1, I have an element of the 3D algebra. So for the hoop called x, I have this element. For the hoops called y, I have this element. And then I have an extra, which has no interpretation yet, and this is in cyclic words. Okay? So again, the tail multiply, you just merge it, yeah?
What did the union of lambda 1 with lambda 2 mean?
The union?
Yeah.
Oh, so lambda is a list of three elements, one for each hoop. This is what lambda is.
Oh, but there are different issues with lambda 1 and lambda 2.
Yeah. If you are to make a connected sum, there will be different. So this is essentially the concatenation of the lists. Okay?
So I thought you had the same set of keys.
No. They will never have the same set of keys because otherwise this connect sum operation is not well defined, right? You cannot take the connect sum of a thing that has a component called Scott with another thing that has a component called Scott. You must have Scott here and Alberto there. Sorry. Okay. So the tail multiply operation is you just merge two elements in the free, two generators in the free algebra. The head multiply is you delete from this list the word corresponding to x and the word corresponding to y. and you create a new word labeled Z, which contains the BCA, the Baker-Campbell household product, of the word that used to correspond to X with the words that used to correspond to Y. So it's essentially the product. Okay? And then the head on tail action is, that's the bizarre thing. So the head on tail action is you take mu, so you take this entire information that you had, and everywhere you see a UE, so U is a balloon that got conjugated by a loop. So everywhere you see a U, you replace it by U bar conjugated by the exponential of the adjoint action of the word corresponding to X. Okay? The problem is that the word corresponding to X we have used in it again. So you just iterate this. So you stable apply, you apply and apply again and apply again and apply again, and the point is that every time a word appears with every time sort of a U appears within a lambda here, within a bracket with U bar, it appears somewhere deep within that bracket. So when you iterate this operation, you end up affecting deeper and deeper things in the Lie algebra. So if you look at if you restrict your attention to any finite part of the free Lie algebra, this converges. I'll show an example in a minute, but before that, I will say that then there is a twist or a spice that you add. And the spice that you add is zero on the part, so nothing, maybe it should have been the empty set, on the part of the Lie words, but you add a certain cyclic word. And the cyclic word is a function of U and lambda, so the U and the lambda of the X that are participating, and I will call this function G sub U of lambda X. So, I see that I only have about 3 minutes to go, and I'm afraid of Jorgen, he's bigger than me. So, I'm sure you've noticed. So this is sort of an example of how this iterated replacement works, and I don't want to go through it, but the only point is that sort of the later changes appear deeper and deeper in, so in the graded completion, it converges. And then I have to tell you how to define this functional J sub mu, J sub u of lambda. And again, in the interest of time, I will not tell you. I will only tell you that this is a completely Lie algebraic definition. I mean, G sub u of lambda is defined to be J of 1, where J is a certain function of the real numbers, which is defined by J of 0 is equal to 0, and J satisfies a differential equation. It's given by the solution of a certain differential equation, which can be solved explicitly degree by degree. And I mean it, I've solved it explicitly, degree by degree. Okay? And then this J satisfies a relation that looks a little bit like a co-cycle condition, and having this relation will mean that if we add it to the actions we had before, so if we add it here, the resulting thing will still be a metagroup action, an MGA. No proofs of anything, in fact, not even specific definitions. Why all these? Because, well, no, I'll skip this part. Finally, you can define an invariant. So all in order to define an invariant, all you have to do is to define it on the generators. So I will define it on this generator to be the, so this is the hop link with balloon U and loop X. So I will define it to be 0 on the spice side, and the Lie word U, labeled by the hook X, for the lambda bar side. Likewise for the negative of it. And the claim is that this becomes an invariant, it satisfies all the relations, and it becomes an invariant, and in fact it is the log of a universal universal finite type invariant of so-called W tandem, whatever that is. And furthermore, I mean business. Everything can really be computed. It's not just fake. Further, like always, when you have diagrams, so when you have trees and wheels, they often have Lie algebraic interpretation. So given a finite dimensional Lie algebra, not necessarily semi-simple, by the way, then the free Lie algebra can be interpreted as a certain space of functions on that Lie algebra, or several copies of that Lie algebra. Wheels can be also interpreted as functions, but somewhat different. And then therefore we get a map, which I will call e to the tau, going from wheels and trees into, again, functions. Okay? And my claim is that if you take this map, interpretation in a Lie algebra map, and apply it to the invariant zeta, what you get is a universal evaluation of the BF quantum field theory with observables corresponding to the KPH that I started from. Let me say further that, okay, in fact, this interpretation map in the Lie algebra suggests many quotients of this invariant. So Sergei Gukov, is he here? Hi, Sergei. Yesterday said that the simplest non-commutative Lie algebra is SL2, and he's wrong, because there is also a two-dimensional Lie algebra, okay? And nobody ever considers it, because somehow it doesn't fit with ordinary quantum topology very well, but it fits with this topology extremely well. So take this evaluation map in Lie algebra and use it in the two-dimensional Lie algebra, and it will tell you that you can mod out by many, many, many relations, and much of the space collapses, and when you look at what stays after all the collapse, everything becomes explicit operations. The BCH formula becomes completely explicit. It's written here. The ODE becomes completely explicit and can be solved by looking at Boyce de Prima, and this is the solution. And when you simplify it a lot, it becomes a construction of the Alexander polynomial, which, as I said at the beginning, is better than anything else out there, and is being written up right now by Sam Selmani and myself. The picture of Sam is over there, and the original is over there, and I'm afraid of Jorgen, so I'll stop with my usual propaganda.
Questions?
So where did the cyclic thing come in? I only saw zero for the cyclic.
It did not come in the depth. Well, the cyclic thing only came in. Where was it? It only came in the head on tail action. And in fact, so it only came here. So if you have a knot that can be computed without head on tail actions, it will not have wheels in it.
But what do they mean geometrically, these wheels?
I have no clue. I know where it came from my perspective. So from my perspective, I was studying universal finite type invariants and blah, blah, and you know, it came up in some natural way, no time to explain, but I have no geometric understanding. Now, wheels are the co-invariants of the universal enveloping algebra of the free Lie algebra. All of these are words that appear in our subject all over the place. So there must be a reason, okay? It must mean something, but I have no clue what it is, okay? I should say, if you had dropped the wheels here, it will still be an invariant, only a weaker one. And as such, it's equivalent to the Milner linking numbers, and it's just the best formula to compute them. When you add the size, it becomes equivalent to the minimal linking numbers. No, not equivalent. It becomes more than the minimal linking numbers plus the Alexander polynomial. And some restriction is the Alexander polynomial, and it's still the best formula to compute this.
Any more questions? Well, let's thank you.